You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your Frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know. But no one ever asked.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's all. If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's all. It's all. Yeah. I should know it's all.
Could you hear me? Could you hear me? Okay.
Well, you're right there.
No. But I'm just saying, could you hear me in your ears? Could you hear me in your ears?
No, you're right here.
I know that. But I could.
So we got two episodes in one. Mm-hmm. We took two guys that we thought were really, really good. Yeah. Two separate days, but we combined them up, to really just give you a double portion, a double fister, baby, right? Of really two guys who understand, who've battled some I would say life changing things.
Oh, absolutely.
And so just kind of letting you guys know, it's two episodes, two different people. So if you go take a break and you come back, you didn't hit the wrong button. It's just
our unsung heroes series.
Yes, unsung heroes, and that's just kind of how I do it. Just throwing something new and fresh, keeping you on your toes.
All right, coming up is Vinny Churchill, former special teams member and Super Bowl player with the Carolina Panthers, turned real estate guru, and he's managing multiple family apartment complexes. You're about to get iced up. So what is that? Those are questions that are selected at random that you have no idea what's coming. There also may or may not be follow-ups to each question. So Smitty, go ahead and ice them up, son.
I know this answer, but I got to ask it anyway and step on this personal landmine. Okay. East Coast or West Coast?
East Coast. Come on, man. You know that.
All right. Peanut butter. In the refrigerator or in the pantry?
Pantry.
Cool. I like that. Instagram or Facebook?
Instagram.
Why?
I don't like reading. I just look at pictures. That's why.
That's actually a really good reason.
That's a typical defensive player. He don't want no words. He just want picture. C-ball, hit ball,
run.
don't buy into Smitty's stereotypes of defensive players.
Bro, it is. Defensive players, we'll get into it later. All right.
Yeah, all right.
One item that you cannot leave the home without having.
My phone.
Why?
Oh, man. Work, family. I do everything on that thing. It's like a lifeline.
Okay. All right. Now, I know you like to cook a little bit.
Yeah.
favorite food to cook?
Man, I got to be honest with you. I'm a big griller, so I'm going to have to say I like to grill steak and chicken and smoke butts and chicken and all that stuff.
Smoke.
Pork butt.
Yeah, he's talking about pork, bro.
I just made it sure, man. Keep it
clean, bro.
That's why I needed clarification.
It's a family show.
It is a family show. So when he said, I like to smoke butts, I'm like, what? Is this Vinny or Sir Mix-a-Lot?
No cigarettes.
Is it Vinny or Sir Mix-a-Lot?
All right, Vinny. So just take us down memory lane. You know, coming on this podcast, which we enjoy, we like to talk about the person inside the jersey. You played this game the right way. You're a special team ace. But there's so many layers to you, and we want to give our audience an opportunity to learn about Vinny and also disprove the dumb jock theory.
Yeah.
So take us through who was young Vinny growing up?
Young Vinny was a underrated blue collar, hardworking, prove everybody wrong. I was too short. I wasn't smart enough. So whatever I did, I carried that throughout my whole career. You know, I was an undrafted free agent coming out of Boston College. You know, I got cut, made the practice squad with the Carolina Panthers, then got activated with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for like 6 or 7 weeks, then got cut again, then went back to Carolina, and we went to the Super Bowl that year. And then, you know, I was fortunate enough to play with you for another 3 years and then moved on to play with Minnesota Vikings for 2 years. And then I signed with the finished up my career with the Detroit Lions and did 2 years there and then ended up retiring because of some injuries.
The highest paid player in the National Football League, when you signed a undrafted free agent contract with the Carolina Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Urlacher was the middle linebacker, the highest paid player, making $15 million.
Yeah.
Okay. What was your undrafted signing bonus?
Believe it or not, Steve, I had the highest paid free agent signing bonus. I think it was like $12,000 or.
Ooh, shut up.
Back up the Brinks truck.
What? The Lego Brinks truck.
I was killing it back then.
Yeah.
And, I think my rookie contract was $225,000 was my rookie contract. But I will say this. I do remember lining up on kickoff, and I do remember seeing some guys. I won't mention any names, but I remember seeing some guys that were making some big, big bucks that year on the Panthers. And I was like, damn, I am killing myself. Hitting the wedge. Remember when we had the wedge?
Yep.
You know, it was just like the wedge buster and just getting beat up for $225,000. And then, you know, you got guys making millions and millions and millions of dollars chewing seeds with their ball cap on. I was like, there's something wrong with this picture. You know?
2020, huh?
Yeah.
What is an undrafted free agent? What is that process like for you?
Coach, you know, rest in peace. Coach Mills called me around the 6th round. I got a little excited because he's like, "Hey, Vinny, we're gonna probably end up signing you in the 6th or 7th round." And the 6th and 7th and 8th round came, and I don't even know if they have an 8th round, but
they don't. But continue.
Yeah, whatever. that's how much I follow football these days.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. Then after the draft, I actually got a lot of interest from like 5 or 6 teams. And Coach Mills was the first one to call me, and I just, you know, Jersey guy, you know, similar story to me, small, undrafted, undrafted, worked hard. So, you know, I felt immediate connection with Coach Mills, and, you know, went to camp, and, you know, it was a struggle every day, man. It was, you know, it was fight for your spot every day, and, you know, and just trying to prove to the coaches, to my teammates, that I belong, because that was like my MO, because people always thought I never belonged on like the college level and the football on the NFL level. So for me, and still to this day, Steve, I take that approach where I try to prove myself to my family, to my workers, to my employees, that, you know, I do belong, and I'm here for the long run, and, you know, try to do something special, whether it's, you know, with the family, with my business, or for a good cause, or whatever it may be.
You were cut twice.
Right.
You were cut by the Panthers twice, and
cut by the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yeah, you were cut by the Panthers and the
Minnesota.
Bucks.
I was cut Minnesota. By New England. I took a short stint in New England right before I went to Detroit.
You had a cup of coffee, huh?
I had a cup of coffee in New England, which wasn't fun, cup of coffee, but had a cup of coffee there.
Everything you went through, how was it? What was the experience for you as an undrafted guy in the National Football League? Because everybody believes, you know, football players, everybody makes a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
Now you signed a contract for $225, but when you got released or cut, you were on a practice squad. What was the practice squad pay?
I think the practice squad pay at that time was like I want to say like $7,000 or $8,000 a week. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, it's a lot of money, but
yeah,
for being in the NFL and going through what you have to go through week in and day to day, it wasn't really that much money. But I got to be honest with you, it was an amazing experience. I made the best out of it, and I really maximized every dollar I made. I really saved and invested. And luckily for me now, I'm in a good situation where, you know, I make more money now than I did in the NFL, you know.
What, Vinny, what goes on in the life of a practice squad player? Because definitely for me, and I didn't play professional football, didn't even play at the college ranks, but so many people that I know, whether it be fans or friends or people who I know who maybe even are close to the game, will look at that and say $7,000, $8,000 a week, sign me up any day, but give me –
Now that's $6,000 or $7,000. That's only for 17 weeks,
uh-huh. Right.
So that's it. Like when the season's over, you know, for these guys and teams that don't make it to the playoffs,
yeah.
Dunzo, no checks.
Wow.
So, see you next September.
Yeah. So walk us through. Would you tell us more about what the experience is for a practice squad player?
Listen, I will say this. I mean, coming out of college, I was young. I didn't have a family, so. For me, just to be in the NFL and have the opportunity to be in an NFL and be on a team as the Carolina Panthers was guys like Steve Smith, Julius Peppers, you know, Musi Muhammad, with guys like that was an unbelievable experience. But I will say this, it was also a grind. I mean, you're also at times a dummy per se, because you're just there. You know, you practice Tuesday through Thursday or Friday, and then that's it. You're not traveling with the team. You're sitting at home. You're watching the game at home if it's an away game, and you're just waiting for the guys to come back so you could go back to work on Monday or Tuesday, whatever it is. But you know, I lived that single life. I was, $6,000 or $7,000 a week was a lot of money for me at that time. I had a little apartment right up the street from the facility. We used to go to the tavern on the tracks and eat dinner and lunch and all that good stuff. And, it was a lot of fun. I will say this. It was a lot of fun. It was a grind. It was an amazing experience. I met amazing people. I got to watch, you know, Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers like Steve and Julius. And it was an incredible, incredible experience.
I'm hesitant to ask this question, but I got to ask it because I'm on my own podcast. What was it like to be a teammate of Steve Smith?
Oh, we in the good stuff now.
There's probably I'm gonna be honest with you. You were probably the only guy I was really scared of in the Carolina Panthers.
You were scared of Steve?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Steve was a ferocious competitor. He brought the intensity every day. You knew what you were gonna get from Steve. And if he was in a bad mood that day, you better not walk by his locker in the wrong way or give him the wrong look, because he's going to give it to you, you know?
It's becoming a reoccurring theme on this podcast.
I'm starting to hate this podcast right now. And I have to ask the question because it's my podcast. I wish I'd go high right now.
You can't.
What do you mean if you looked at Steve the wrong way?
I remember looking at you one day.
Just give us a good Steve story, Vinny.
I just wanted to say what's up to you. And I don't know if you had a bad day in practice or you got in a fight with somebody. And I looked over at you, and you looked at me like, what the hell are you looking at? I was like, damn, man. I was like a rookie. I was like ready to go pee in my pants. He's scary, man. He's scary.
Vinny, a little tyrant.
Was or
is currently?
No, you use past tense, brother.
I said I was a little tyrant. It sounds like
in
there.
Yeah. I think you still got that fire in you. Don't fool nobody, man.
All right, Vinny, you got to give us a good.
You just know how to mask it a little bit better now. Yeah, we're just a little bit more mature.
Hey, still a little bit more mature.
Yeah, Vinny, you got to give us a good Steve story. I mean, you gave us one to win. Maybe he wasn't. Well, I'm asking. We're going a little off script. Give us a good Steve Smith Senior story, Vinny.
Oh, man, I just got to be. I was thinking about this the other night, and there's not too many there's not too many times that you get to play with a guy like Steve Smith, and I'm not here to blow smoke up anybody's but. The things that I saw in practice, the things that I saw on Sunday, forget about practice, on Sunday were just, you really appreciate it when you're away from the game. When you're in the game, you don't really recognize it. You just don't really pay attention to it because you're in the game. But when you get to sit back and you look at a guy like Steve and what he's accomplished and what he's done for the game, man, I really appreciate everything you did, Steve, and what you continue to do for the NFL.
Well, I appreciate it, Vinny. I loved a guy like Vinny because Vinny was a special team Mason. Some people would look at Vinny or they hear special team Mason, they're like, well, he plays special teams. What's the big deal? Well, first of all, that's how I got in the league, by playing special teams. Vinny was on punt return 2003. Hell, I was a starting wide receiver playing punt return, playing kickoff. So Vinny was blocking for me. And there were times, depending on the opponent, I would personally incentivize guys to block a little bit extra because of the caliber of players. Meaning, I know these guys are, Vinny trying to feed their family or just trying to accumulate more passive income. And so I would make sure, like, hey, hold that block up a little bit longer. Or if I scored a score on a return that I didn't anticipate, we just make sure that we took care of the guys. I like to call them the wheels of the vehicle. Yeah. Like, it could be a nice vehicle, but if you ain't got no nice wheels on it, that thing ain't going nowhere. And Vinny was part of that process. And so I really loved playing with guys like Vinny because I also believed as myself as a blue collar worker, right? That I understood hard work was the way to go. But we're going to shift a little bit, Vinny, because I think this is why I wanted you on our podcast was this. You got $12,000. You made $225,000 if you had finished the season, but you got cut a few times and you was on practice squad. So your salary always was inconsistent.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
Right. Yep.
What were you doing with your money while you were playing?
For the first couple years, I saved pretty much every penny. I mean, like I said, I didn't have a family. I was single. I wasn't spending any money at going to places or going to the mall, spending money. So whatever money I had, I accumulated and I saved. And then once I had enough money, I actually bought my first multifamily building. It was a 12-unit apartment complex in Passaic, New Jersey.
Hold on. I want to debunk the dumb jock theory.
Right.
And so that's what – how long did it take? How many games? How many years? And how much was that you did and how long ago that was?
Right. And I believe it was it was the beginning of 2004. I don't know the exact month, but So it was about a year and a half, and I accumulated enough money. It was about $350,000 that I had in my bank account. And I bought a 12-unit building. It was $1.6 million at the time. And you needed 20% down. So it was about $330,000. And I had enough money, and I ended up buying 12 units. And I was making like 10, 12% return on my money every year, along with appreciation every year, because, you know, real estate, multifamily goes up every year. So I held down. About 2 years it took me to buy 12 units, and then I held on to that property for about another 2 to 3 years, and I refinanced that property, and I pulled enough equity to go buy 32 units in the next town over in Paterson, New Jersey. And you know, I just kept rolling after that, man. I just kept
What intrigued you to start buying apartment buildings? You're playing in Charlotte, just went to the Super Bowl in Houston, lost. Mm-hmm. Most guys are licking their wounds. As funny as when you're saying that, I'm thinking about, I was a third round draft pick. My whole contract for three or four years was 1.5 after taxes, about $725,000 that I blew through. I didn't save.
Right.
I had given it away to family, made some, you know, just made some dumbass decisions.
Right.
So I was living, sad to say, for 17 weeks, I was living paycheck to paycheck.
Really?
Right.
And I'm becoming a free agent looking to cash in, and you over here leveraging your $300,000 to a $1.2 million, $1.3 million business
property.
Where in the hell is this coming from? Like, how we're on the opposite ends of the spectrum.
I didn't
screwed up my money.
Yeah.
You are out here leveraging your money. Where did you get any of this from?
Fortunately for me, Stephen, my father, you know, he came over to this country from Sicily, and you know, he similar story to me. He worked his butt off and saved his money. And he ended up buying apartment buildings also. So he was naturally, it was in the business. It was kind of in my blood already. Mm-hmm. I kind of grew up in the business of owning and managing apartment buildings. I remember my father would pick me up from Clemson when I was at Clemson. And he'd take me straight to Paterson, New Jersey. He's like, I need your help. We got to carry this refrigerator up three flights of stairs. I'm like, come on, Dad, really? I just finished the season. Now you got me carrying refrigerators during the summer. I said, this is crazy. But, you know, I grew up in the business, and I was fortunate enough to have my dad that was in the business as well. And that's why I kind of talked to you. I mentioned to you earlier that I was wanting to help out some of these young kids and kind of direct them in that we're just kind of guide them and make sure they do right with their money and not, you know, live paycheck to paycheck. Cause you can live very nice after football if you invest your money properly. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that just want to take your money and act like they want to guide you. And we know people that, you know, we played with that lost millions and millions of dollars.
Wow.
Making bad investments, you know. So I was fortunate enough to be raised in a family where they already started, you know, buying apartment buildings and you know, kind of knew about it already.
How easy for both of y'all, how easy and how often does that happen to where people either don't plan or get taken advantage of with their money?
Yes. I can tell you, listening to Vinny's story, that the interesting part is I didn't have a dad picking me up
exactly
during the summer to help with his business, to take a washer and dryer or a refrigerator or a bookcase up three flights of stairs to an investment property. So I didn't have that, like Vinny said, that DNA. To be honest, we did a podcast weeks ago with another defensive player that I call a friend as well, DeQuell Jackson, and he talked about his family DNA, what he had visioned and experienced as a young man.
Right.
Vinny experienced from his folks, hard work, invest, take every penny you have, invest it.
Right.
I wasn't taught that. My folks were, when I made it to the league, I was their lottery. I got the opportunity to change my family's misfortune. Mm-hmm. Now on the hand with Vinny, hell, Vinny became part of the norm, and him playing in the National Football League, and after I say this, tell me if I'm accurate, for Vinny, and like I've told some young guys, I would tell young guys this, the National Football League is an opportunity, is a, you know, using my dad analogy, is a stool. So it helps you wash your hands. It's a stool. It's a step up for your life to start,
right,
or to get going. And the fact that Vinny is making more money outside of football retired than he did playing football, man, that's a story that needs to be told.
Yeah, I'll let you know his business acumen.
And I love that. So how could you take your football game plan or playbook into your business? How were you able to put those two together and to mesh them?
I took the same approach. In the beginning, not too many people know this, but I went after I retired. I took about a week off, and my dad had already been established. I think he had like 300 units or something like that, and I had I think I had about 60 or 70 units myself. And, you know, my dad needed some help managing his properties. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I can't sit home. I'm going to get bored. I got two properties out there. So, you know what, let me get involved and let me see what this is all about. So I was getting paid like $400, $500 a week, just going around, checking up on properties, you know, coming off of making, a lot of money a week from $400 a week. But I knew that wasn't going to last forever, right? I knew that if I grinded and I stayed focused and grew my business, that one day I'd be sitting back and enjoying the fruits of my labor. But it took, Steve, first property I bought was in 04. That's almost 20 years ago, So the game with real estate is time. It's not a get rich quick type of business. It's a business where time is your friend. And the more time goes by, the more value you get out of your property, the rents go up, you get turnover, So time is the best thing for real estate. And it took me 20 years. It took me about 20 years to really live a good life, But I had to hustle. I had to work hard. I remember getting up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, going to shovel my properties, snow plowing. I almost wrecked and died one day in a snowstorm on a highway, going to plow our properties, So I just kept that mentality where I was just going to outwork everybody and just take it from there day by day, And as I got older, I met more people, I met more realtors, I met more people in the business and networked and found some really great deals back in like 2008, 2009, right after the crash. And, I was fortunate enough to find some good deals that propelled me to even higher levels.
We have to take a break. And more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut to It. And I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut to It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut to It.
Facebook?
Cut to It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
You know a spot, but not just a spot. The spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of black businesses do the same. So I want every black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
How long did you believe you wanted to play in the National Football League?
I got to be honest. After I left Carolina, the love of football, I lost the love of football, to be honest.
Why is that?
I really enjoyed being a Carolina Panther. And I just, for me, that was like my home. I loved the city of Charlotte. I loved the team. I loved the teammates. But as soon as I left there, Steve, it wasn't the same. And my head wasn't in it. And that's exactly when I said, I need to maximize every penny I have and just invest it. And just, because I just wasn't into it.
What kept you going then? Because you rattled off, even at the beginning, you rattled off how many times you got cut, how many times you got relocated. What kept you going? What kept you motivated?
The money, because I used the NFL as a vehicle to invest in my business. And I said, for the next 4 years, or however many years, I am going to play this game because of the money.
You and I both have played the game. We've been on rosters where you can smell, see
right.
The guy who is just there for the paycheck.
Right.
But, bro, if I'm being honest, when I watched you play and when I played against you, bro, you looked and seemed like you had the desire for the game. And I'm not saying that you didn't, but there are some guys I play with, you'd be like, man, when this dude gets cut, he's done.
Yeah. Right? You just knew that.
Bro, I go back. My rookie year, there was a guy, and I don't know why, there is a guy named Kevin Coffey. He played at Virginia Tech. Kevin Coffey was a wide receiver. We came in the same draft class. He was an undrafted guy. Man, they cut Kevin, and Kevin didn't put a damn pair of cleats on no more. Right?
Yeah.
They wore him out. It was 3 weeks. It was probably 3 months of hell for him. You can see every day he got up, he was like, man, I'm done with this.
Wow.
Right? And so that's why I'm asking that, because there are going to be people listening to this. They're going to say, man, I can identify. And then there's going to be some people that will take that and go, oh, man, he cheated the game. He didn't play for the passion.
The football purists are going to be like, why was you just motivated by money and not for the wins of the championships?
Yeah, so that's why I'm asking that, not to paint you in a bad light, but just more give a great perspective of that. Man, this game will chew you up and spit you out.
Yeah,
and you don't even realize you on the menu.
I knew that. And for me, football wasn't my life. You know, I don't want to say the wrong come off as the wrong wrong thing, but like I said, football was only a small part of my life, and I had bigger goals. I had bigger visions. I want to build a real estate empire. Mm. So that to me was more important than, trying to hang on and try to, milk the NFL. I wasn't trying to milk. I gave it my all. You know that. I gave it my all. Blood, sweat, and tears, hours, whatever. I gave it my all. But, you know, football comes to an end. And you have to realize that, and you have to gear yourself for that. And the earlier you gear yourself, the earlier you prepare, the better off you'll be in the long run, you know? So, you know, yeah, okay, 4 years into it, I started thinking about, all right, what's my next move? How am I going to set myself up and my family up where I don't have to go hit 300-pound men in the head? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How am I gonna provide for my family and not kill myself in my body doing it?
It took me 10 years of playing until I started to realize that I need to start using my brain.
Steve, you were an elite player, man. I was a day by day. I was lucky to be on the team. You know, it was, you're an elite player, and I'm a player that, you know, you get rid of, you could find another guy in the street for less money, you know? So,
but here's the thing, though.
I knew that. And I knew that. You know,
here's the thing you don't realize, Vinny. You can say I was elite, but I play scared.
Yeah, where you at that mindset?
I play scared every freaking day because, unlike you, I didn't have a pop that can take me under his wing and say, hey, let's move this refrigerator. Right? Yeah. I didn't have this example.
Right.
To say, hey,
this is how you can do it.
You can take football and you can go over here. I mean, I didn't start realizing football was a conduit. Football was an instrument in which it allowed me to go some places.
Right.
Bro, until I was probably 7-8 years into the league.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I started realizing, I can start using my mind a little bit because, you know, we have been programmed in football to almost check our brains at the door. Hey, hit ball, see ball.
Yeah.
Catch ball, run route.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Vinny was more prepared than a lot of players were. Heck, even some of his teammates, me. Yeah. Right? And I made 10 times the amount of money Vinny was making.
Yeah.
But yet I was 10 times behind the eight ball of Vinny as well.
There's almost this classism of the elite players and then me, where you're looking at it, Steve, and you're basically saying, I wish I had what he had, right? Like you're looking at Vinny and you're looking at him like, I just wish I had that preparation, or I wish I had someone pour into me like that. So it's sitting on this end of the conversation. It's amazing how, and I think that how it happens everywhere. You only look at it based off of your perspective and your experience.
Based off knowing Vinny and knowing how successful he is outside of football, I'm looking at Vinny like, damn, this dude got the hookup. I'm just figuring it out.
Yeah.
Right.
And the contract didn't matter.
No.
Yeah.
The contract is great. You know, I'm not going to sit here. I ain't going to turn it in right now, you know, cash it in so I can do that. But I would say,
from a perspective standpoint,
from a dad's perspective, like, I'm like, damn, oh, my son Peyton get like Vinny, right? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it get like Mike. I want to be like Vinny. Just this, his forward thinking yep. and understanding that ball was just a stepping stone for him. And he realized it and is kicking ass and taking names and building doors, mm-hmm. right?
I just want my kids to you know, look up to my, you know, say, hey, you know, my dad worked his butt off. And, you know, I just want to set a good example for my kids, you know, teach them right, you know, be there for them like my parents were and guide them and just, you know, help them become adults, you know, and think forward and not just get fixated on one thing and put all your eggs in one basket, because that's not how life is. You know, football doesn't last forever. Baseball doesn't last forever. What are you going to do with that money? That's going to carry you for the next 50, 60, 70 years. You know what I'm saying? You need to yep. figure it out. And the earlier you figure it out, the better off you'll be.
Next up on the Unsung Hero series, Dex Gerolds. He's a personal fitness trainer and CrossFit coach, and he's an advocate for people with type 2 diabetes.
I read your article on Yahoo Life, mm-hmm. and the title was "My Body Looked Great on the Outside." The article was very helpful, but also intriguing, because what happened to you and what you were doing when it was all happening, and correct me if I'm mistaken, and I'm okay with that. We will edit it out anyway. but you're basically heavy into bodybuilding, heavy into sports, and really loving it. And you looked, based on the title, "My Body Looked Great on the Outside." So you were working extremely hard in the weight room, and either with supplements, also with food, to look like a chiseled specimen. But yet maybe you were doing some things on the inside that was actually counterproductive. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's correct. That's almost, 100%, I would say.
Take us down that path of how you got to become a huge advocate, a very vocal advocate for diabetes.
I just started CrossFit probably a year or two before I was diagnosed. So I was working out maybe 2 times a day, 5 to 6 times a week. I was also working at a Buffalo Wild Wings out in Boston and working crazy hours. Anyone who works in the restaurant industry, especially as a manager, probably works 10 to 12 hours a day. So that was a part of it. So I was working out like crazy. I was eating mostly paleo at the time, except when I was at work and I couldn't really cook food that went with that kind of dieting. So I would just eat whatever is there. So it'd be really sugary sauces with fried wings, lots of French fries, stuff like that. And I'm a classic overeater. So most people eat 12 to 18 wings. For me, it's 25 to 30, 40 wings in one sitting? In one sitting, yeah.
You said a classic overeater. Now, I play ball. Man, that's some D-lineman kind of stuff. 40 wings?
I can pull
wings?
This off a good 15, 20, 40
40 wings?
Yeah. If it's in front of me, I'm going to just keep eating until it's done. I don't know if it was because growing up, I'm the youngest of four. And if you didn't eat fast enough, you didn't really get much to eat. So
you ain't eat.
Yeah, so I think that just was something that was in my mentality as I grew up. So it's a lot of food all the time. I used to eat, and this was the bad food that I ate, but I would eat sometimes 2 packs of double stuffed Oreos while I was playing Call of Duty or something like that, just mindlessly eating a lot. So that is a big part of it. It's just the fact that I didn't do that all that often. There was a few times during the weekend where I would really eat like that, just because of, I don't know, stress with work and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And plus I was working out 2 times a day. So all those extra calories I was burning, I was trying to take them back in. But even with my eating habits like that, it was the best shape I was ever in. I had a 6-pack, chest looked good, back looked good. could do all these things that CrossFit requires, like gymnastic stuff, muscle ups and all that. So it never really crossed my mind that I was overeating or anything like that. And I was watching this story about a CrossFit athlete, and he was talking about some of the symptoms he had before he was diagnosed with diabetes. One of the ones was he was always thirsty, which was something I was always, I was drinking water probably every 30 minutes or so that I can remember. And then at night it was the worst, because I would wake up, drink a whole bunch of water, hour later, use the bathroom and just repeat the cycle 3 or 4 times a night. And so much water where when I walked around, like you can hear it slushing in, wow. in my body. So that was one of the things. And then he started to talk about his mood. Getting irritable a lot. I'm a naturally just happy person. I mean, some things make me mad, but you have to get me to a point to get me mad like that. But I was just having these mood swings at work. And I remember my employees, one day I hear them whispering that I was on my period. And that really set me off hearing that. And those are just things that were natural to my character or personality. So after seeing that video, I made an appointment to go see my doctor, went over, told him, I think I have diabetes, tested my blood sugar. I think my blood sugar at that time was like 350 or 400, something off the charts.
What's the normal level for,
your blood sugar.
For your blood sugar?
So, a normal person, without diabetes, you're probably going to be around 70 to 90.
70 to 90 and you were 350, 400?
Yep.
Wow.
And yeah, no, I'm not even realizing how much it was affecting my body at the time. So yeah, so he came out and was like, yes, sir, you're right. You have type 2 diabetes. And it was crazy because it was a shock. I think I was doing all the things, you know, you every time you hear about someone having diabetes, it's like, oh, because they don't work out. And
yeah.
All this other like factors and stuff like that. And I was doing that. Like, again, I did overeat, but sometimes when I overeat, it was just, it was healthy food. I was just overeating healthy food sometimes.
Can we park a big old bus right there? In that, because you're saying overeating, you're saying stress. How were you so stressed that you were literally eating double stuffed, a whole carton or a whole package of Oreo cookies? Eating 40 wings is one thing, but you also like have to order those 40 wings. And, you know, do you get ranch? Do you want celery? Do you want carrot? And I'm just asking all that because sometimes we talk about compulsive eating or compulsive buying, but there's a process prior to that compulsive behavior.
As far as wings, that was simple because I was already at work. I can have one of my cooks, cook up the wings. When it comes to the Oreos, stress, working those many hours, a week, not really getting paid much and, felt like my boss was, out to get me a lot. Even though I was doing the best I could do. I mean, even before I moved to LA, I got raised to assistant general manager before I decided to move here. But I guess the process, I mean, I'm not sure how much we could talk about, but when it comes to Oreos, one, the grocery store was right down the street from me. So 2 blocks, I can walk down and come back. Okay. And at that time I was smoking a lot of weed. So, and that helped me combat the stress that I was getting from work. I found other outlets to keep me occupied.
What are those other outlets?
So sometimes I paint now.
Ooh, Picasso, huh?
Try to be. I don't know. It looks more like a Picasso Jr. or something. Picasso Jr. So kindergarten stuff. But no, I enjoy it. I brought some DJ equipment. I've been really enjoying that lately. I'm big into music, especially hip hop, R&B from the 90s and early 2000s. So I've been doing that, and luckily my roommate, he's always here, so he keeps me distracted with stuff too. So we're playing video games and stuff like that. So now I'm not, and I know what eating 2 packs of double store Oreos is gonna do to me. So yeah. I'm not eating that stuff anymore. It's just you know, like you said, like I am responsible for some of the things that I've done in my life to get to this point. And I'm not going to blame it on anything else. Like I know there's things that I grew up with, like overeating and stuff like that. But since I'm conscious of that, then it's up to me to fix that problem. I can't just blame it on that always and say that's why I'm like this.
When the doctor told you, it's one thing to think you know, but then when the doctor tells you, you do have diabetes, type 2 diabetes, what's going on in your heart and your mind?
So my doctor, like a lot of my stuff, I always situate my myself into a place where everything is accessible through walking. So my doctor was about 3 or 4 blocks down the street from me. And so that walk was a long walk home. Just thinking about my family's history of diabetes, thinking about my grandmother, learning that she passed away from diabetes when I was a kid. And I didn't really know the scope of it when I was a kid. I just know that diabetes did that. And then just throughout my life, family members like, oh, why did they pass? Or why did they get their foot chopped off? It always came down to diabetes. So with all that going on my entire life and then hearing that I had it, especially at that age, even though I was probably the most active I've ever been. And
what age were you?
I was 26.
Doctor gives you that. What is your first thought in your head as you're walking back?
I'm gonna lose my legs. And just being an active person my whole life, that was like the thing that like scared me the most, is that I won't have the ability to run or jump or play sports or do the things that I've enjoyed my entire life. So that was my first thought. I wasn't even thinking about death or anything like that. It was the fact that I wouldn't be able to do the things that I was doing before.
We all probably have those family histories, just like you. Both my grandparents had it. My father has it. And so you just see it. And that's what you're used to, is you'll see a family member lose a limb. You'll see a family member have to check their sugar, or they got the sugar. That's what we tend to call it in our community. So we stigmatize it so much. And that was your first thought, is I'm gonna lose my leg. Not that I'm gonna cope with it or manage it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, managing it didn't come for another few days after that, but that was the thing. And then I remember watching my mom every morning shooting up insulin. Like, she had it. My father had it. And my father passed away just a year ago because of complications with diabetes. So yeah, those thoughts were in my mind. Never thought about, all right, I'm gonna have to manage this. Cause I never had a real example. I mean, my mother takes care of it really well, but other than that, I never had or heard an example of anyone managing type 2 diabetes. People just kept on living the same lifestyle that they lived. Yep.
What stigmas do you think you want to break about type 2 diabetes?
I think the biggest thing is just like the Yahoo article said. I mean, I did have some bad eating habits, but for the most part, my eating habits were well. I mean, I ate fruits, vegetables, and whole foods. Sometimes with the overconsumption of that and then the snacks. But I just want people to know that genetics, there's a big factor on why you develop diabetes, not because you're not exercising or doing the things necessary to not develop type 2 diabetes. And there's learned habits that people have. And once you realize those learned habits, you realize that, that there's things that you did throughout your life that was learned and not necessarily just your fault, because a lot of people get down on themselves once they develop type 2 diabetes, that you need to learn those things that you might have or realize those things that you might have developed throughout your life. And from there, that's where you make your changes. And another one is just the support. A lot of people don't support people with type 2 diabetes because it's just seen as that lazy person's disease. And when you don't have support, it's for most people anyway, mentally, it's a struggle to actually want to fix the problems that you have or have developed over time. So I think...
I don't want to sound insensitive. Well, what kind of support are you
just talking not about? Telling people that, because I hear it all the time, especially like throughout my family with some of the people who are overweight, they don't support them in the way that's necessarily needed to support someone. Getting putting someone down over and over and over may not, because depression comes in, and when you get depressed, then you don't want to do anything at all. People get really, so sometimes laziness is really depression. So instead of putting people down and saying this is your fault and did that way, like, hey, I'm with you. If you need anything to get better or fix this issue, then I'm with you. Just more positive reinforcement from people. I have a sister who is over 400 pounds. And a lot of times growing up, people dogged her on her weight,
I'm sorry.
And I just luckily enough to just spend some time at home with her, just talking to her. And she's down, I want to say 80 pounds now.
Wow.
With everything I've learned, you know, I text her, send a positive reinforcement of what she's doing. And I think about her and her journey through life and how she got to where she got. And then people seeing that and just automatically being negative towards her. So, I mean, I'm proud of what I've done, but I'm way more prouder of what she does. And I'm going to get to support her in the most positive way that I can.
What's the biggest myth living with diabetes?
I guess the biggest myth is, I think people automatically think that you can't have desserts or anything with sugar, which you can. It just needs to be in a manageable portion. A lot of times I'm out somewhere and like people say, let's go pick up some donuts. And then they go, oh, wait, Dex can't have donuts. And I mean, like, it's not true. I can have a donut and still have my blood sugar be managed. So I think that's one big thing. And especially when it's the two types of diabetes, people don't seem to understand about type one is that usually you develop it when you're young and you just don't develop or your body doesn't produce insulin at all. But once you hear diabetes, I think everyone's mind goes directly to type two and what you can't do with type two. But there's still a lot of things that you can do, especially when it comes to your diet. You just have to monitor it the right way and not overdo it like I used to.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Could do it. Could do it. Let's get down to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from CutToItPodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You're diagnosed with diabetes. Now what do you do?
I'm a lover of information, always trying to find information, find things, find out about whatever I'm interested in or whatever's going on in the world. So I just, you know, hopped on the internet, hopped on Google and started looking up ways to manage type 2 diabetes. And I even brought a book, Type 2 Diabetes for Dummies. So that was my first thought. I wasn't thinking about trying to conquer it or anything. I just know I needed to know more about what was going on in my body.
And then what do you change anything? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, do you just go back to your, you know, you go back to working at the restaurant, eat, you know, eating a 40, 50 wings every couple of days. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what did diabetes really do to you? What did it move psychologically?
I started to think about, well, I have diabetes, I can overcome diabetes. There's other things I've seen. I have examples of people overcoming things in life, and I'm going to be the one who changes this stigma around type 2 diabetes. So from there, I just started, after I did that research, learning that lower carb diet would be better to manage my diabetes. Exercise, which I was already doing, that was pretty easy to do that, to maintain that anyway. So yeah, just my diet changed a lot. The overeating stopped. I stopped eating fried wings and went to grilling wings and only eating around 12 of those, having a lot of greens now. Those were the initial changes that I had. And once I got to LA, that's when my being strict on my diet, a little way more strict than I am now, especially because I've learned that portion sizes will allow me to eat certain things that I used to eat in my past. But then it was just straight paleo. So fruits and vegetables, meat, and that's it. Very little fruit and no starches like rice and white potatoes. Lucky enough, I lived in LA where we were talking about grocery stores and the cheapest food would be the processed and sugary food.
Food for less.
Exactly. You go into any bad neighborhood, low income neighborhood.
That's everything that's there.
Have access to the better foods, the organic foods and stuff like that. They tend to only get the more sugary, more refined processed food. So a food for less or shop for less is going to look way different than a Whole Foods. You'll never see a Whole Foods in a low income area. So luckily that was the one saving grace that I was able to go to these places. And if you buy non-organic vegetables, they're usually pretty cheap for the most part, and you just have to go home and wash them and all that stuff on your own. So I was able to do that. Luckily I had found a job at a bar, and at the same time I found a job at UPS. So I was working a lot, even though it wasn't enough to really make ends meet in LA, but it was enough to give me access to high quality foods. So I guess my biggest thing was just changing from eating the double stuffed Oreos. I used to really like graham crackers. I ate a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So cutting down the carbs was one of the biggest changes that I had to do when it came to managing type 2 diabetes. And then just my mindset of, I know that some days won't be the best days, but I'm going to make the best out of every day.
What was the point, Dex, that you wanted to go forward with your story and become an advocate for type 2 diabetes?
I think I was training so by this time in LA, I started working at a CrossFit gym, and I was training an older lady who was pre-diabetic, and I was telling her I was diabetic and giving her this information that she never received before. So I just started sharing what I was going through on Instagram, and people responded to it. It was just because, again, type 2 diabetes has that bad stigma, and no one has really ever, or at least people tell me they've never seen anyone post or write or talk about type 2 diabetes in the way that I have. So that was the start. I just wanted to share what I was doing. I didn't really care if anyone responded or anything like that. I just wanted to share it, and it just turned out to be a blessing because I was able to reach a lot of people and talk to a lot of people and help a lot of people in their life journey or their journey with type 2 diabetes.
Do you think it's fair to say diabetes maybe saved your life?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I was just thinking about this last night. Not even just saved my life, but opportunity. So much more opportunity to do things. I mean, I've traveled around the country because of diabetes, and me speaking about it. I've been able to make workout videos, just so much more opportunity from type 2 diabetes. And then I think about my faith a lot, and you hear a lot like God would never give me anything I can't handle. And that's how I feel about my type 2 diabetes. And another thing I always think about is I want to be more Christ-like, and Christ did nothing but help people. So now I have this ability to help people. And I think, I don't want to say like God gave me type 2 diabetes, but I think he knew there was this avenue for me to help people. And I would have the strength to do that. I still, at the end of the day, I wish I didn't have type 2 diabetes, but the fact that I do and the fact that I can help people and the opportunities that have risen because of that is, it's definitely, I've changed my life and saved my life.
One of the really cool things about both of these guys, what I really loved, was you have Vinny talking about, an undrafted guy who played in the NFL utilizing his gift of playing football, but understanding that it was short-lived, mm-hmm. and that he will have to live and be able to provide for his family for years to come. So you got money, right? And then you got Dex, who talked about what he experienced, why he experienced that, and then also, too, not really blaming anyone other than himself, but then also taking diabetes type 2, the bull by the horns. And so he talked about body, right? But both of these guys also gave us a peek into their minds. So you got mind, body, soul.
Finances.
And then also that really, because money can be the root of all.
Absolutely can.
Of the money. Your money can be the root of all evil. But they took basically everything that life has given them, and they took advantage of it instead of becoming a victim.
That's very true.
Right? But also taking ownership. Yeah. Vinny saying, hey, some purists of football would say, well, he played for the money. Well, nobody really plays. Nobody goes to work saying, hey, don't pay me.
Right.
But then also understanding that this was the deck that he was handed, and he was okay with it. Instead of complaining that he's missing an ace of hearts, he just said, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. And made the best out of it. Being a former teammate of his, he was a guy that you relied on. And then Dex is one of those guys I really love this story, because he broke down how, what, when, why he got diabetes.
Right.
And then now, how did he come out of it? And so, really, this was our unsung hero, because it on Cut to a Podcast, you are going to hear some big name guys.
Correct.
And that's cool. Mm-hmm. But I'm also kind of like what I believe I am, is a little guy. A guy that, I like to always say, you can buy a Corvette, but it ain't going to go unless it got some gas. And some wheels on it.
Yeah.
Right? You ain't never seen
it. It can look good, but if you don't put the gas in the tank, it really don't matter.
Or if that thing on bricks, you ain't going nowhere. Right? And so I really love that they were the wheels and the engine of the car, because you need those guys. And so I'm not saying they're little guys, but just more if they're not a named guy. Mm-hmm. But they are people that we need to hear from, because everybody has a story.
Yeah, and everyone does have a story. And that's the thing I love, honestly, about our podcast, is that we're going beyond the X's and O's. We're going beyond how people perform, or even in Dex's case, just his day-to-day career. We're going behind the scenes. And both of those guys were very transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Vinny was transparent about saving
almost
his money.
A little bit too much.
you can argue that, but for
in
us,
in a good, healthy way,
in a very healthy way, because we know it's going to help somebody, right? Someone is going to take Vinny's financial prowess to heart. Someone is probably listening to this, and maybe they're struggling with diabetes, or they either have gotten a diagnosis, or maybe a diagnosis is coming. We don't know.
Or they're scared.
Or they're scared, right? So we know that someone's going to benefit from this. So this is the reason I love doing this podcast, with you, and love having these stories, because it's true. We're going to have some really great names, and we've interviewed some great names already. But I think having these stories to tell, we're going to highlight a practice squad player and actually learn how he saved his money, or we're going to interview a personal trainer and he's going to talk about, you know, overcoming a disease that's prevalent in so many communities. Man, it's just dope. And I'm just really enjoying this. And it was great to talk to them and also great to glean from them as well.
Yeah, it was really good. So hope you enjoyed it. See you next time. I'm Steve Smith, Sr.
I'm Gerard.
Cut to it.
Cut to It with Steve Smith, Sr. That is me, is a production of Cut to It, LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith, Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media manager Peyton Smith. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck. Production manager is Sarah Pollock. Theme music by Alex Johnson. Lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. Cause you know it's on. It's on.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.